Podcasting is a complicated profession, but don't worry, we're here to help. My name is Dan Morin. Welcome back to our coverage of The Bad Batch, airing on Disney Plus. And with me to discuss the latest episode is, as always, my co-host, Tony Sindelar. Welcome back, Tony.
It's me. Hello, nerds. Happy to be back talking about Star Wars, a thing I don't ever stop talking about, but sometimes I stop podcasting about.
It's just a matter of whether the recording's on or off, really.
Absolutely.
That's what it is. Who would have thought? Tony, if someone had told us 25 years ago that we'd be here talking about Star Wars and people would listen to us, I think that was the key thing, because we were also talking about Star Wars 25 years ago.
What's a podcast, and how did you get into my house?
What a day it would have been. Mm-hmm. We're here to talk about episode 3 of season 1 of The Bad Batch, entitled Replacements. So I'll quickly run through the episode. We'll discuss it and see if anything pops out at us.
Do it.
All right. So we open with the Bad Batch in flight. Omega is hanging out, just like reclining against the power droid, because apparently there's no place else for her to be. Mm-hmm. The Hunter is distributing rations, which are running low, and the systems in the ship are glitching. Echo is upset because Tech won't help him, and Tech is prioritizing building a scanner to test their inhibitor chips. But the diagnostic indicated no compromised systems until the ship drops out of hyperspace and basically crashes onto a moon. Wrecker hits his head. They basically make it out okay, but they have a damaged capacitor with one spare on board. There's a scene where Omega pulls out a trunk, asking if the backup is in there, and you realize this is Crosshair's weapon kit, and there's sort of a moment of them debating whether or not Crosshair was actually responsible for going against them, basically. On Kamino, Crosshair is being checked out. He has responded favorably to the procedure, and we meet for the first time, I believe, Vice Admiral Rampart, who we saw in hologram form. Mm-hmm. Last week.
Now in the flesh, not just in propaganda.
Now in the flesh, yeah. Not just in propaganda. Rampart has been put in charge of something called Project War Mantle. There are top recruits that they have sort of conscripted who are here to train under Crosshair. And basically there's a debate over whether sort of these, what's more effective, these conscripted soldiers or the clones. We meet the first batch, these four elite squad soldiers who are top soldiers from around the galaxy. They were sort of are wearing these like black clone armor, similar to what Crosshair is wearing, but a little different. Back on the crash moon, something is lurking in the shadows as Tech and Echo replace the capacitor. Echo goes to investigate and finds claw marks in the ship, and something darts out and takes the capacitor out of the ship. Wrecker is having a headache. This keeps being a recurring theme this episode. And they realize there's something out there as the ship powers down and the creature jumps out on the canopy and has taken the capacitor. Tech identifies it as an Ordo moon dragon, which feeds on raw energy, and they need to track it down because that's the only capacitor they have. Omega is going to go with Hunter, despite his initial objections. They head out to look for the creature. We see the recruits on Kamino being scanned and poked and prodded, and one of them expresses the fact that, like, basically the Empire has given him food and shelter, and the Republic didn't really do much for him, and this is all about loyalty. To test them, the recruits are sent to Onderon under Crosshair's provision to wipe out the Saw Gerrera, which the Bad Batch failed to do. Back on the moon, Hunter and Omega are tracking the creature, and Omega sort of emulating Hunter, and she asks if she can learn to track, and he points out it's an enhanced skill, like the rest of the squad, which leads to a mention of Crosshair, and Omega tries to basically take the blame off Crosshair, but Hunter is angrier for leaving someone behind, and Omega promises they'll find a way to get him back. Meanwhile, the recruits are landing on Onderon. One of the, I have in my notes, I describe him as one mouthy soldier.
Yeah, I have him as jerk guy.
Jerk guy. Who is all like, I don't know why they leave a clone in charge. Enjoy being a commander for now. Saw's camp is packing up when the clones and recruits attack. Meanwhile, Hunter and Omega spot the capacitor, and the dragon jumps out at Hunter and knocks his mask off, which Omega grabs and puts it back onto him, but not before he has basically been knocked out. There's no comms, and the dragon disappears into a hole, so Omega takes Hunter's pistol and goes off after the dragon. Crosshair is picking off the partisans. There's a recruit with a flamethrower. They kill the pilot and capture the rest of them. One of them says she won't tell Crosshair where Saw is, so he immediately shoots her. Crosshair then is going to wipe out the rest of the civilians here who don't know where Saw is when the mouthy recruit steps up and points out this is wrong. These are civilians. We should take them in. Crosshair says, you know what? They put me in charge because I'm willing to do what needs to be done. He kills the recruit and tells the rest of them to finish the mission. We sort of pan away at that point, but there's the sound of blaster fire and flamethrowers. And so they apparently follow through. Mm-hmm. Omega is in the tunnels and locates the creature's lair, finds the capacitor, but then hears the creature, which freaks out whenever she points the flashlight at it. Hunter wakes up and can't find Omega and starts trying to track her down. Turns out the creature doesn't seem to like the flashlight, but is fine when it's not on. So Omega throws the flashlight as distraction, and the creature starts eating that instead. She takes the capacitor and rejoins Hunter. Crosshair and the recruits return to Kamino. Tarkin and Rampart are impressed with their effectiveness since the Bad Batch had failed to finish that mission. The clone program is still active for now, but it seems like it's in the, you know, being wound down, or at least the recruits are sort of being amped up now. We see the two Kaminoans, the Prime Minister and the medical director, who want the clone program to keep going, and they feel the conscripted soldiers are a threat. We learn that Jango Fett's original genetic material is degrading, and they need to basically come up with a new superior clone, but they'll need a direct source for that. And we hear that the clones required will not return willingly, but they point out they only need one. Meanwhile, the recruits have taken over the Bad Batch's old quarters. Crosshair spares a glance at the tick marks as they walk in. The Bad Batch leave the moon, and Wrecker takes Omega back and shows her the quarters he's made for her in the gun turret, reminding her she's part of the team now. Mm-hmm. And that's where we leave off.
Yeah, so a lot packed into short, less than 30-minute episode. A lot happens. And we get to visit in with a lot of threads, whereas the previous episode was kind of just with the Bad Batch.
I actually thought the Kamino part of this was slightly more compelling.
Yes, I agree.
Yeah, it's more... I'm interested, like, you know, Crosshair is an interesting, conflicted character, or at least conflicted in the sense that we want him to be a good guy, and he's not a good guy right now. But is that his fault, right? Like, this is sort of the ethical question that's coming up here, is like, how much of this is him, and how much of this is his inhibitor chip and the programming they've subjected him to?
Yeah, I felt like what the Bad Batch had to deal with this week in terms of they're stranded on a moon, they need a part, there's an alien. Not a lot to that. I mean, I think we got to learn a little bit more of the kind of character moments. We see a little bit with the kind of like, Tech and Echo clearly have a dynamic where they are handling the nerd stuff, mm-hmm. But have different priorities that Tech doesn't care about anything short of life support, such as, you know, the hyperdrive failed. They were real lucky. They were in within range of a moon and not, you know, inside of a sun or in the middle of an asteroid field or something like that. They kind of put Heavy on the Wrecker on the sideline for this episode, and there's the question of was that just done because to keep it, you know, to keep the number of characters manageable, or headaches foreboding when you one may have a chip inside one's brain.
He does mention that he may have hit his head in the crash, and he does.
Yep.
He does hit it in the crash, but there's also a question of whether that may have triggered something else.
Yep. We get more Omega and Hunter hanging out together. Do always question the, you know, this thing that lives on a desolate moon and eats electronics. How did that evolve?
There's a lot of other stuff in there, like in its little lair, right? Like, yeah. I guess it's like had a lot of ships come out of orbit there.
And, friend of the show, Joe Steele, kind of made the observation that, you know, the Bad Batch, I think, is struggling a little bit as a show with its identity of it are we dealing with the horrors? And the Clone War kind of, I think, perhaps sometimes struggled with this, sometimes threaded this nicely. Is this a show for kids, or is this a show about the horrors of war? And I think this episode is a little bit uneven in terms of it can't decide what that is. And then it's like, oh, it turns out the horrible monster just is scared of flashlights and wants to eat electronics, not people. But also, let us talk about, you know, whether let us talk about whether civilians should be murdered or captured in a military insertion and all of that. So
it really seemed like a moment.
The Bad Batch was almost the B plot for let's check in with what's going on, the rest of stuff.
I agree.
I thought that was interesting. Again, a lot happens in this episode. There was a lot where it was like, what is and isn't being said. I thought it was, I guess, strange, but perhaps it is significant or tells you they're not a big deal that the four recruits that Crosshair is in charge of didn't get named, as far as I can tell. And really only two of them seem to really have, you know, identities, and he's dead, and one of them's dead now. I did kind of question the whole this test that we're going to send them on. I guess it's a thing that needed to be done. They need to mop up, but it's not like they're testing something different, I guess. In terms of, I guess they're just testing compliance with orders. In that the mission they sent them on didn't seem particularly challenging for them. Their only casualty was from themselves.
Friendly fire really gets you there. Yeah, no, I think you're right. I mean, it seems like it's weird, right? Because I think in some ways this is a sort of a retcon to explain why don't you keep the clones running through the Empire, right? Why do you replace them with the stormtroopers who, as we've seen in the original trilogy, are of wildly varying but almost uniformly bad like soldiering?
And like, you know, I mean, I think the answer is they're cheap and you don't need them.
Right.
You're not, you know, the clones are very expensive. The Kaminoans are basically arms dealers, except that their arms happen to be, you know,
attached to bodies
of Jango Fett. There is the, you know, it seemed like bringing in Rampart in this episode, did he look a lot like Agent Kallus from Rebels? Maybe it's just the cheekbones. It's just all Imperials start to look the same after a bit. I assume that is because they need to, like, Grand Moff Tarkin can't keep showing
up. Yes, that was kind of my reading as well. Like, he needs to be more hands-off.
We need to send him off.
We need to have our own villain that we can sort of work with within the structures of this show.
I do think that their plan to, you know, transfer from clones to recruits, like, you should do that somewhere that the Kaminoans can't like walk around and observe your meetings, because they have a vested interest here. But whatever.
Well, it's interesting too. They're having they're having Crosshair in this particular case lead, you know, recruits, which, and they seem to be suggesting sort of a hybrid approach to where like the clones will keep going, but they may start using them more as like training and commanders for their recruits. And and the point is made, and I think rightfully so, like, they want people who are loyal to the Empire out of a choice, right? Rather than the clones are certainly bred to be loyal, but we've seen in the past, as with the Bad Batch and elsewhere, like, you know, that loyalty is not unfailing, whereas like the people who join up because they want to join up, you know, there's none, you know, they're bigger zealots in some ways. So I think that's an interesting approach, and it does, like, I think a lot of this show seems like it's about essentially like the development of the Stormtrooper Corps and the recruiting of people and soldiers, etc. And like, we got about, I think we've got somewhere in the vicinity of 20, close to 20 years, 18 or so years before we get to sort of the state things are in A New Hope. And we certainly know by the period of like Rebels, at least, that
there's not really any clones around.
There's
the
not
presence
really
of a clone would be notable at the era of Rebels.
Yeah.
Right. And we don't know if that's because they've been killed off, if they medically die off at an accelerated rate, or they've all just been, I don't know, they're all on vacation on some one planet they don't leave. It's really
all
great, guys. Trust
now.
Me, nothing bad happened to them. But yeah, it seems like they're not, it's not like, you know, there's a couple mixed in with the Stormtrooper Corps. It is notable.
Yeah. And so, and then as you point out, I think also the Kamino agenda, I think, is interesting too, right? Because they seem to feel like, well, they're not like sabotaging anything per se, but they are sort of like, hey, we've got the inside track and we know that they want to replace us, so we have to come up with like a better product, basically.
Yes.
And that product seems to almost certainly be based on one of the Bad Batch or Omega. The question is sort of out there. They're a little vague about which clone.
So that's in the, you know, in their final, they're on the catwalk watching clones eat in a mess hall, which apparently, I guess, you got to feed clones all the time too.
Yeah,
just standing
right
around. They say that they need a better sample. They only need one, but they might have a hard time getting them back. And I was like, what does that mean? Because
they already have,
they've got Crosshair.
Yeah, they've got Crosshair.
So do they not, do they not need, I mean, do you make a clone of a clone with the Bad Batch? So it made me think Omega, which made me question, are there other Omega equivalents wandering around?
Or is she the prototype,
do they mean something,
sort of?
Yeah, or do they mean something completely different? Like, do they want to clone a Jedi, or I don't know. But that mention seemed intentionally quite cryptic.
The nature of Omega is still a big question. I think in this episode, what's interesting about it is we see her emulating Hunter, trying to do the tracking, and she has some success with it. We don't know if that's, you know, luck or unnatural success or some sort of innate skill that she's got. But it does raise the question based on stuff that we've seen her do in the past. There's a lot of stuff where we've seen her like mimicking what the rest of the Bad Batch are doing or someone else is doing. And I think the question is sort of open whether that's just sort of a natural like child thing to be doing at that point. Just like, oh, you know, it's just emulating the adults that are you're around, or whether there's something that in there that has to do with something intrinsically about her nature. You know, whether it's that she is force sensitive or perhaps she just has a skill that's about mimicking other people's skills or something like that. But we didn't really get a direct like hint of that, at least not as heavy-handed as we got, say, in the pilot, right, with her shooting the blaster. I think we still have a lot of questions about what exactly her deal is. And I assume that is the hook for sort of later as I'm guessing the season progresses. I think we'll see a little bit more of an ongoing plot that touches the Bad Batch, because right now we're just sort of seeing them character moments as they gel, right, like into their new normal, and we haven't really gotten an ongoing hook for them.
No, I mean, it seems like we are building toward they've got to reconcile with what are their feelings about Crosshair. Do they, you know, do we have our scanner, do we figure out how to remove chips? Oh, now we have a way to remove chips, now we need to go find Crosshair and give him a choice. And you know, and Omega did the thing of really kind of speaking up for like, oh, I know all the Kamino and science. His actions are not his own. That's what the chip does. So it seems like they're laying a lot of groundwork for we got to go back and give him a chance for him to decide if he's evil or just an agent of evil.
Which is interesting, too, because, you know, we know that his like conditioning is amped up. And there exists the possibility they go back, they remove the chip, and he's like, no, I'm still staying, right? Like,
yeah, a good soldier still follows orders.
Yeah.
Also, I just shot somebody last episode. Were you not paying attention? So.
There's some good character pieces.
I shot a guy that you thought was going to be the guy to shoot other people because he was a jerk. No, I shoot the jerks. That's how mean of a guy I am.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting that they had that one guy who's like a real jerk, and then like you have the moment where it's like, oh, wait, no, he's actually the good guy.
Dan, even jerks can still have ethical quandaries. So
a stop jerk is right twice a day. Is that what you're saying?
I did kind of wonder about like where do they get these four recruits from, because it's like, who are the professional soldiers that presumably are not the same as mercenaries in a world where we've had armies of clones and robots? Like, where did you go to soldier school? But I mean, I guess there could have been people who were out there doing other security services ready to be elevated.
Yeah, local jobs.
Yeah. The one with the flamethrower was like, why did you bring a flamethrower to this fight? But whatever.
That's the only weapon I know how to use.
Yeah. This episode did have a lot, which I did not love, of scenes in very dark blackness between what was happening on the moon and the fight in the jungle, and especially the stuff on the moon. I don't know if it was just my TV, but I had a hard time being able to tell, like, am I actually supposed to really be able to see anything here? Like, I can see them moving around with their masks, but it's like, this is very dark, and you should get some better lit moons.
They all wear very dark armor. Both the Bad Batch and our new recruits wear the sort of dark gray, like proto Death Trooper armor for the recruits and stuff. And Crosshair's helmet, which now looks different, I think, seems very... It's the closest we've seen to sort of a Stormtrooper helmet, I feel like.
Yes, it's definitely headed in that direction.
I thought there were a couple good character moments in this episode. I enjoyed Wrecker making the bunk for Omega. We saw him kind of relate to Cut and Sue's kids last week, so we understand that he certainly seems to have a soft spot for kids. I enjoyed his bit when they were strapped in and crashing, where he's like, we're gonna die, and then he looks over, he's like, we're gonna be fine. You know, there's a few other bits in there with, like, you know, Tech, again, like you pointed out, like not being concerned about anything that doesn't affect life support. Lots of nice interaction moments between the characters.
Yeah, it did seem like they were kind of picking up right away on that theme of, like, this is not a great place for a child to be. We don't know how to deal with this. There's, you know, she's literally basically just hanging out with a gonk droid because she doesn't have a bunk. You know, there's also, did we mention that there's no food and there's just ration tube left? And, you know,
I feel like that opens up. I'm wondering if, like, there seems to be a theme in these first couple episodes, right, where they're just like, we are running away. We don't really have a mission. We don't really have a goal. Our right now, all we're trying to do is, you know, stay under the radar. But at some point, it does feel like they're going to need, like, a positive, like, thing to do. Okay. Like, what is our goal? What is our mission right now? And it seems like, you know, I think... it will be interesting to see that develop. I wonder if we'll have a couple more episodes of them trying to sort of being on their heels, right? Like, oh no, we're out of food next week. We got to find some food.
I was not even, you know, when they fell out of hyperdrive and had to deal with being on this moon, it's like, I was a little unclear. Where were they even headed when that happened?
You know, away.
Yeah, away. Yeah. Just popping here and there on the outer rim, staying under the radar.
My wife was really glad that that planet was not full of those spider creatures from the Mandalorian.
Those are awful. I don't like those. That was not an easy episode for me to watch of the Mandalorian. I was also kind of relieved that they were not Minox, because the only thing worse than there's only 7 characters in Star Wars universe and you're going to see Pwnda Baba on every street corner is when it's like, there's also only 5 animals and we're going to use them over and over again. So, though I didn't love that it was, like, a space lion dragon thing, I was glad that it was not Minox, because it's like, I don't need it to be Minox. it's a big galaxy. Please have a couple extra creatures that live on this desolate moon.
No. These are, Tony, these are Moonox. They're totally different.
Yeah, totally different creatures. They've developed to live on a moon. You're thinking of Minox, which live on an asteroid belt. It's totally different.
Totally different thing. Yeah. Totally different. All right. Do we have any other things to bring up about this particular episode?
I don't think so. I don't trust this Rampart guy. I believe he did get promoted at the end. That was the little.
He leans on that whole admiral.
Yeah. I think he was introduced before as a vice admiral. But yeah, he's got those high cheekbones. Never trust those. He is voiced by someone who voiced a completely different Imperial character in Squadron.
Yep, I saw that. I did look that up because I thought he sounded familiar.
I was like, do I know this voice from Clone Wars or Rebels? Nope, I know it from a Star Wars video game. You know, interesting that we didn't see Saw Gerrera this episode. I'm wondering if we'll see him again. It does feel a little bit like the Bad Batch needs a mission. They can only kind of bum around for so long before they need something to be working toward. And, you know, I think in Star Wars fashion, it should likely be some kind of plan, be it a heist, a job, a military campaign that requires, like, multiple things, right? Like, we need a bitter ship, we need an ally, we need a weapon, and they require us to go to 3 different planets to gather them. I feel like that's got to be coming, and I look forward to that.
I agree. There are threads. Like, I think you make your point. There's, like, threads because we've got Saw Gerrera out there. We've got Rex out there. We know that, like, I mean, it seems to me the most logical mission is, like, all right, we got to try to get Crosshair back. And we got to necessarily, you know, it's just 4 of us. How are the 4 of us and Omega essentially going to try to break into Kamino and get Crosshair's inhibitor chip out and then convince him to come along with us.
Oh. Well, I look forward to seeing where they go. I think I thought this episode was a little bit, though it was headed in a lot of directions and maybe more uneven than the last episode, I think it hit some more interesting points than that last one did for me.
Yeah, I agree. I like this episode. It was a little, I agree with you that the Bad Batch plot is the weakest part of it, because it's mainly about them running around after an animal that's stolen their batteries. But I'm kind of hopeful that once they sort of start getting more of a motivation to go do something, that this sort of, that part of it will pick up. And I actually am fascinated by the whole like transition from Republic to Empire, yeah, and the clones to the recruits and all of that. I think that is really interesting stuff to go into and sort of figure out what's the deal with all that.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's the if you're not interested in that, this show is probably not going to hold you, because that to me is the, we have not seen anything around this era. What does this transition look like? Is this transition interesting enough to make a show? Presumably it is, because they made a show. But we either need to see that through the Bad Batch's eyes, or I guess we've got Crosshair or other Imperial people back on Kamino. So it was good to hop back there. But I think that's about all I have to say about this one.
All right. Well, let us wrap up here then. Thank you, everybody out there, for listening. We, of course, will be back next week to talk about episode 4 of The Bad Batch. We appreciate all your support. And, of course, I'd like to, as always, thank Tony Sindelar for joining me. Thanks, Tony.
Goodbye, nerds.
We will see you next week. Until then, may the Force be with you.